Welcome to the M3 Podcast. Your journey to movement, mindset, and medicine starts here.
What is up, M3 family? Welcome back to another episode. It's your host, Mermaid Bree, and I hope you all are having a great start to the holiday week and season overall. It's a time to take a little bit of a rest, spend time with your loved ones, enjoy them, spread cheer, laughter, play all together to be in that abundance of each other's energy and company and love. This is a time where you get to enjoy and embrace the gratitude within each other and share memories that will last forever. And if you are anyone like myself who creates their own schedule, freedom, time to have that flexibility and maybe even solitude by choice, I love traveling. And so I am taking that time to enjoy some quality me time in Mexico while I will be flying back on Christmas Day. And your girl does not take any days off. So expect another episode to drop Christmas Day and New Year's Day with some great conversations and interviews to come. I will still be pumping them out Mondays and Wednesdays through the holiday season. And with today's interview episode, I have my old neighbor and friend, Patrick Ziedlik. He is the CEO of Hephaestus, which is a tech and AI support company that is named after a Greek god of fire, I believe the son of Zeus, which has a story of being a craftsman. Very cool to watch this, I should say, company bloom and blossom from the very beginning, as I've watched him also grow as the CMO of Flylisted, and he's the CTO of over 5 different companies. He's a private capital advisor, he's also a real estate agent, and he's on the board of Journey to Refuge, which is really cool to see as somebody who works in a similar organization with Baja Bound Builds in not only the same town, but with so many of the same volunteers. Being able to share Patrick's story is such a privilege. He comes from a Polish background, which makes a lot of sense into how he's so disciplined in today's world. And he's also been through some serious hardships, including homelessness. And he shares how he's no longer afraid or willing to let go of what needs to be released in order to achieve his dreams. He is not afraid to lose or fail or fall and knows how to pick himself back up time and time again. I'm so proud of this person and I'm blessed to call them my friend, and I can't wait to share his story with you all. Welcome back, M3 family. It's me, your host, Mermaid Bree, and I've got Patrick in the house. I'm actually in your house right now. Welcome to the show.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me. Stoked.
It's a long time. We met because, I used to live in this building. We're neighbors. And I feel like having all the connections, we've had a lot of mutual friends where we've just crossed paths over the years, that I see you on that same level, that same light of where I'm at. Business, self-development, all of it. And Achilles is in the house too. What's up, Achilles?
Yeah, no, we definitely crossed paths. We boardwalk, walking, health, sunlight, fitness, and then found out, okay, you're in the same building as me. But then you decide to disappear. But OPG brought us all together, and we're all kind of in the beach community being active, so it's nice.
Shout out Ocean Pacific.
Yeah. Right?
So what fascinates me about you is, A, your background story. I want to get into that as well, but also, you run 5 successful companies right now. You're the COO of 5 successful companies and tech companies included. I would love to talk about first what got you to this point, because you've talked to me in passing, just, you know, casual conversation about what life has been like, that you were able to lose it all, gain it all, lose it all, gain it all, that that risk factor isn't scary to you anymore.
No, yeah, being uncomfortable is definitely not something that repels me. It's something I realize it's a position I kind of need to be in. Mm-hmm. You know, we all understand the idea of asking for something, wanting something, manifesting something in life. But the higher that vision is, the higher and better of a person you have to be able to attain that. It's not just asking for it. which means that when you go after that, life is going to forge you. It's going to put challenges and things in your way that are going to make you that person if that's truly what's in your heart. Mm. So it's not just like, oh, I want to be a successful entrepreneur and here it is, the world's going to lay it out for me. It's like, okay, here's the qualities that you have to have. Here's the pressures you have to endure. Here's the types of mindset and thought processes you have to be able to be this person you want. So how do you gain that? Well, it's not easy, and it's not just reading it. It's not just comprehending it. It's experiencing it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't shy away from discomfort anymore because that's what I asked for. You know, that's when I set out for what's in my heart, what I wanted to achieve, what I wanted to do. It's what I asked for. So this is what life is going to give me.
Mm. When I think about this, I think of the opportunities of the universe. When we ask for strength, the universe doesn't always give us strength right away. It shows us opportunities to gain that strength, to have it. Same with patience. We don't just get patience. We are given the opportunity to earn our patience or learn it or experience it. And when you had these maybe challenges or obstacles growing up, what was it like for you, maybe even from childhood or just other experiences? What brought you to that understanding?
Yeah, I think childhood's actually a great place to start. I grew up first generation in the United States. So my dad ran away from Poland in 1987. He ran away from communism. At age 7, he lost his mom. Mm-hmm. And then at age 12, he ran away from his dad. Mm-hmm. So at age 12, he was homeless in Poland in a communist country and then was a coal miner. So you're talking about like we're going to school. He's in a coal mine. And then he was drafted by the government to the army and him and a few buddies defected. They said, we're not doing this. So then they were shot at and chased by the government until they ran into Austria. And then from there, he came to the United States, met my mom, who was also Polish, but they met in Seattle and they had me pretty young. So, you know, I don't really get to have excuses growing up. Like, it wasn't one of those things where it's like, you know, you have that as a background. It's kind of like, okay, you have to be grateful for everything. You have to be grateful for every opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in a family where, you know, it to me, it was normal. It was normal with experiencing, you know, what I did. But it was the school part that really made it hard for me. Because my dad and mom didn't understand what it's like going to school in the States. And I started getting bullied and picked on early on. And so I would go to school half my time and then have a hard time and then go to my home and not really be able to share or give in or do any of that. And I think I was just kind of in survival mode most of my childhood. I remember one time our house burned down, like brief memories when I was younger. We lived in a very poor part of Seattle. In an area that 30 years later is still ghetto. Not like even crime ghetto, just poor ghetto. And I never noticed that because I always had clothes, I always had food, and we went outside camping and did outdoor stuff. So like to me, I never had the idea of money or this or that. It was just normal. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until later on in life that I realized like, oh shit, most of my life I've dealt with not feeling good enough. I dealt with wanting love and not getting it and internally believing in myself being like, but I am good enough, but here's my intentions, here's my hearts, here's who I am as a person. Why am I not getting love back from my family, from the people around me, from the world? Like, what is it? What's wrong with me? What am I doing wrong? And it hurt. Mm-hmm. So I started playing football in high school. And going out of high school, I had this chip on my shoulder. I had this like, fuck you mentality. I was at that point, I think my dad's realized he couldn't really talk to me anymore either. Like I was going to do my own thing. I pretty much raised myself growing up. And I just had this like, I'm going to outwork you, outgrind you, out hustle you, out this, and fuck you to the world. Like I'm going to go be the best. But that wasn't a mentality that was healthy. It's just what I came to. And I wanted just to go play ball. And I went D1 and I got injured. And then I had to make a decision after sitting out a year and transferring schools. And I made a decision. I was like, I'm going to go into business. Mm-hmm. So now I'm 19 years old. lost, with an ego, with insecurities. And at this point in time, I have no idea about personal development. Like, I started maybe looking into like some concepts, but I had no idea about how I was feeling, why I was feeling anything. I was just oblivious to it. I just have my sense of freedom. I'm going to go chase my dreams, and whatever it is kind of happens. And it's when I fell in love for the first time that my ex told me, like, she introduced me to personal development. I realized that getting beat as a kid wasn't normal, and that these things were normal to me, but it wasn't normal. I realized that you shouldn't be walking home in the rain in kindergarten or first grade. You shouldn't be spending years of your life in a park on your own. You shouldn't, like, these things may seem normal to you, but it's not normal to people. Mm-hmm. So it made me start going into understanding personal development and neurolinguistic programming and stuff like that. Now, where this is 2012-ish, you know, around that time. And we eventually broke up. And that was a really difficult spot. One day she just disappeared. We lived together for 2 years and she just disappeared. I found out a year later that she went to rehab and we lost the kid 5.5 months in. She had a miscarriage. And moving on from that relationship was really difficult, but I took a lot of responsibility and accountability. And I made a list of every quality and everything I'm going to be as a man. I made a decision. I'm going to be this. I'm going to be this and this and this and this and this, and I'm going to live my life. I'm going to be that. I can become that. So that really started propelling the personal development journey. And I share that because personal development has gotten me further than anything individual thing I've learned in business. Because in order to learn more complex ideas and philosophies and disciplines in business, you have to be able to learn them through personal development. Mm-hmm. So my first 5 years of business, I was a part of startups. I was a part of other people's companies. I made 6 figures in corporate. I had insurance agencies. I did a bunch of shit. I failed. I succeeded, all types of stuff. And my whole life, I grew up hustling in some type of capacity, selling stuff on swap meet or selling gum in school or something. Like, I hustled my entire life. But my first 5 years in business was just kind of like figuring out, okay, it's not about the money. It's not about the ego. It's not about the insecurities. I need to unwind. I need to undo this. I need to go reset my heart. I need to reset who I am on what I want to do, because this get rich quick, this idea of what happens isn't, it's not bringing in fulfillment. It's not bringing success, and it's not going to get you anywhere. It's going to spin you in a loop, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Personal development. What was the way that your ex at the time or your first girlfriend had introduced it to you? Was there a book, a course?
You know, it's actually crazy. The courage that it took, the first real memory I have of it is a memory that would still be challenging for me today, 10 years later. She made me a bath and I got out, we're in the living room, and it was around getting hit as a kid. And it made me realize that, okay, that was normal to me, but that's not necessarily normal. I then called my dad. I drove over, we sat down, we talked about it, and I cried. Me and him cried. And it was like, that was like my first, like, it was like approaching an issue, realizing it wasn't normal, and then doing the difficult confrontation and getting that kind of closure all in one. Like, to think about what it takes, like I said, now it would still be intimidating to do. So that was kind of like my first foot in. And I got a sense of relief. And it was when you realize that the world you think is this way, and all of a sudden you learn that it's not. But you definitely thought it was, but it wasn't. And there's almost like a distrust in your thinking now, which is kind of a good thing, because now you need to go question everything about yourself. Mm. Now you need to go question everything about life. You don't get to hold on to your concrete, this is how it is. The second you learn that, oh, it's actually not like that, you can be open to personal development and changing. Mm-hmm. Mark Twain had a quote, "It's not what we don't know that hurts us. It's what we know that is not so." Mm-hmm. So the second you realize there's a truth that actually isn't true, you can start being open to personal development and changing about yourself because you want that.
How was that conversation with your father?
It was good. I mean, I don't remember that much, like in terms of the details. It was probably 45 minutes or so. I mean, it was more of just an acknowledgement. You know, my dad was really, God, he's a good man. But like, I'm 31. He had me when he was 24. I lost that relationship. I lost the kid at 24. Would have been 7 years old. Now to think of like me having a 7 year old, I think my dad with that background, losing his mom and coal miner, and at 31 having me at seven, you know, the idea of what your parents can and can't do changes as you become an adult. Mm-hmm. It changes as you become their age. Mm-hmm. And I go, you know, like, yeah, you did the best you could. The thing is my dad taught me such good character and values. He put such a good foundation of what it's like to be a good human being through his actions, through, you know, lessons I've learned in life, that the other stuff, even though it's impactful, I got the discipline and character to be able to work through that. And that's so mm-hmm. much more valuable.
Truth.
You know?
So you had gone into business school, right? At 19?
Yeah, I started going like after I did 1 year of college, and then afterwards I was like, I'm just going to go into business. So I had a fashion jewelry company. I did medical beverage company. I did consulting. I did insurance. I sold rental cars. I did all types of shit.
And it led you to your first six-figure income at that time, or multiple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I know you and I talked about this before, but what happened?
I'd say the first time I started making six figures, it was in insurance.
Okay.
So I was a security guard, and me and my first love were living together, and I cut out and I saved, and I realized I had $25 left over in my account. I was like, I cannot save or cut out anymore. I have to increase my income. So I went on all these interviews, and I listened to all these people tell me they all make six figures while the parking lot is filled with like Fords and Toyotas and old beat up shit cars. And I was like, okay, you guys are all like, and it's not to say that's bad, but like, let's be honest here. Salespeople are pretty like straightforward, you know, like most people that are making money aren't humble here, especially in San Diego. So I get to this place called American Income Life, and I go to the parking lot. And it's like BMW, BMW, Mercedes, BMW, Bentley, BMW, Mercedes, Bentley, BMW, Audi. Right. And I'm like, okay, so when you tell me you guys are all making six figures, I kind of believe it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to get my license. I took a cold calling job on the side, did that for 2 months, then got my license, brought team over. And my fourth, fifth, and sixth, and seventh month, I was top five internationally in the company selling life insurance.
Nice.
So it was like 20, turning 21 years old, making $3,000 a week. Killer. Like, I was buying such dumb shit. I was going to Staples. I had such a fountain pen collection. Like, I just had dumb shit. Like, I started smoking weed kind of for the first time. So I was buying like an ounce. I don't even know why people bought insurance for me. I'd just show up in like three-piece suits in the ghetto with my fountain pen high as hell. I don't know. Just
smooth talk.
God, dumb luck. Like, thinking about like going to like Barry or Logan now and my BMW and my fountain pen and a three-piece suit, showing up with my red eyes with some other young person stoned out of her mind talking about death. Like, what?
Barry Logan is considered our area of probably ghetto. That's like up and coming, I feel like.
Well, Barry Logan, yeah. I mean, there's all types of, you know, I'm just sending you a high. So I went to a ghetto last school and I lived in rough neighborhoods. So like, yeah, 32nd Ocean View, Southeast. Like, there's a lot of neighborhoods. That's where the character's at. Mm. So, yeah, it was interesting. I did that for about a year, though, and I lost my license. And then I lost my license, lost my relationship, and then I moved to the East Coast to go do corporate insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And then corporate, when I was probably salaried the most, I was like 80-90,000 salary plus bonus plus no rent plus a driver and all types of shit. So at 21 years old, 22, going that age, I was so unhappy. it just killed me. And it was like, I was on track to be like an executive within Farmers, where it's like, you have this job at this age, you're running the state of Virginia for a high district doing recruiting business development. Like, you're on track to like climb in a Fortune 100 company. I hated it. I couldn't do the like show up and just, I believed in myself and what I wanted to do more. And I just didn't like restrictions. I didn't like not being able to enact change and do what I wanted. You know, it wasn't the like 9-to-5 suit show up here, which definitely is part of it now. But like back then it was just like, no, this business model should function like this. And I had no control over that, no say, no nothing. So that was my last like job. And I was like, I'm never doing that again. That was, I think I got out of that 2013 or 2014.
And what made you leave? What happened then?
I went to go become a server and walked out as a GM of a restaurant. I just hated it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do it. I would not show up because, you know, what they're asking for, I didn't believe in. And just morally, I'm not going to go push something into a product for money. On the East Coast, Farmers wasn't as competitive as they are in the West Coast, so they had low market share. I didn't believe that, you know, getting someone to go build an agency with what they're asking, requiring, providing was a smart decision. Therefore, I was just ethically conflicted with doing my job itself. So here I am just basically going on my lunch break to the mall to drink a bottle of Crown Royal and watch a movie, come back, say I was in networking meetings, and then drive my ass home and play pool by myself and, you know, drink. And I was just like, this is not it.
I wonder if anybody else has been out there, because I also had a job kind of like that. And I mean, I think it was actually a good job with a good purpose, but it didn't serve me a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about it, it was a government job as well, actually. And when you're there and you lie about your meetings, there's probably people listening to this that are like showing up, saying they're going to meetings, feeling like it's pulling teeth to go into the office, doing any excuse they can to call in sick, or they're begging all day long that they wish they called in sick or could get out early, finding a way to skip out. I feel like it really does compromise your mental health and your happiness and what's really meant for you in this world. And you get to a point where there's enough is enough. And you come back, I think, right at that point to San Diego area.
Well, yeah, there's two things I'm gonna say on that. One, just because you're not happy in the job you're in does not mean you should necessarily go be an entrepreneur.
Ooh, good answer.
So like the world needs teachers and doctors and janitors and this, and there's no hierarchy and value. That's what makes the world run. Go ahead and not have the trash company pick up anymore and see how badly we want that job to be done. Mm-hmm. Go have doctors and nurses not be here. See how badly you want that job to be done. So we're all important and needed. And like, I couldn't be a teacher. I couldn't be a nurse. I couldn't, like, that's not for me. So if you're passionate about those things, you shouldn't have to feel bad about, I'm not an entrepreneur or CEO. That's not for everyone. But two, and this is from Rick Rubin, he's like, your job doesn't have to be your passion. To where you can have a job you enjoy and it pays your bills and it leaves you time and space to pursue your passion.
Bingo.
And your passion may not be able to come in and pay your bills immediately. But you go still have a dream in your heart and you pursue your passion.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was like, I really am cut from the loin of like, I need to run companies and do this. I need a high stress environment. Like, this is what I need. So for me, it was that. But for a lot of people, it's not. And you shouldn't go be something you're not because you see all these videos and go be a CEO and do this. Like, how about do something you enjoy? And if something you enjoy can also be your passion, great. And if not, find a way to do both.
Shit, I'm literally sitting here thinking, like, I'm a personal coach, health and fitness. That is my job. It's what pays the bills. Mm-hmm. But I'm laughing because what did I just talk to you about? I love being on podcasts. I love doing this. I love motivational speaking. That fills my cup right now. Yeah. That's my passion. Is it paying the bills? Not really.
Yeah. And like, could you take the risk and be like, I'm stopping everything and diving in? Like, yeah, you can. But like, do you really need to do that to yourself? No, you can
do both.
Yeah. And you can make time for your passion and you can let your passion grow and evolve. And when you're ready to switch over, and if it doesn't happen, it doesn't. You get to have both in your life.
Mm-hmm.
So I came back at 24
to San Diego
and I did drugs for the first time.
What kind?
All of them.
I was like, the people want to know.
So I packed up to go to San Diego for 1 week. At this point in time, I was living in a condo in Old Town Alexandria overlooking the Potomac. And I pack up my shit for 1 week. 1 week turns into two. Two turns into I never went back.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened with my stuff. I had shoes and clones and jackets and fur coats and furniture. And I don't know what ever happened. I don't know. Just gone. I never went back. So I come back to San Diego and to think like, okay, so high school started working hard in football. Went to go play college football, working hard. Came out of there lost. Knew I just had to work hard again. So got into business. Then got into insurance. Then got into this. Then traveled to the East Coast. Then did a corporate job. Then ran a restaurant. Then came, like, I've had how many years of working hard? I've like, what have I done fun? You know, I didn't smoke weed in college. I barely drank. I always drove around. Like, after college, the only thing I ever did was smoke weed. So I tried cocaine for the first time. And I did drugs for a year and a half straight. Fucked off on everything, just did drugs for a year and a half. And probably the biggest reason for it was because I was still along my path for personal development and craving growth. And it was the first time that I got to look inside myself and my own guard was down. So like I wouldn't do cocaine to go and party and I needed to do this. I would never really drink and do blow. Like if I ever started doing harder drugs or whatever it was, I wouldn't mix. And most of the time I would just sit there and I'd just stare off and be like, are you okay? And I'm just fine. Like I would just stare off. And I realized that I wasn't confident because I was confident. I was compensating for a lack of confidence. And I got to have such introspective thoughts. And yeah, a lot of them were garbage. I mean, they're blown out or whatever. But I got to look inside myself and I didn't have a wall with myself. It was just like I got to be vulnerable. I got to really go search and go inside myself. And that led to, you know, once I stopped having that kind of growth and perspective, switching over to like LSD. And LSD really started making me more on the spiritual side of things. I'd say around that time I had my first more like spiritual breakthrough. And then I stopped doing drugs. I stopped partying and just moved on back to a professional side of the world again.
I mean, you can't just skip to the very end already. Okay, so spirituality. What is spirituality to you?
What is spirituality to me? It's your relationship with God. However that may be defined for you. Spirituality is a relationship with something beyond you. It comes into your source. It's your relationship with the unknown that you know and feel, but you can't define.
And how has it grown or evolved for you? Did you have a relationship with the universe, God, your higher power, since you were a child?
Look, I went to Catholic school. Like, no, not Catholic school. I went to, like, church. I was raised Catholic. Same. And then we kind of stopped going. And I don't think I did. Especially, I don't think I did because, you know, I had such adversity growing up. If where was God during that time, right? Like, where, like, so, like, I didn't have that kind of outlet
teaching
or belief.
Teaching you strength and patience. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right? Like, looking back at it, hindsight 2020. But, like, I didn't have that kind of relationship. I didn't kind of have that teaching. I didn't have that. I just didn't have it. So, God started becoming more important to me when I started really going, thinking deeper than myself, right? Like one day we woke up and we never went to sleep. Like everything disappears. This all ends. Like you start getting older, you start thinking of the concept of mortality. You start thinking about your time is limited here. You start wondering, where are these thoughts coming from? Where are these feelings coming from? Like, what is this? You start asking those questions. You start dancing with God.
Hey, M3 family, check this out. Whether you're a fitness enthusiast or someone looking to take that first step towards a healthier you, First Form's got you covered. Their high-quality supplements are designed to help you perform at your very best, from premium protein powders, complete micronutrient packs, and cutting-edge pre-workout formulas that will kickstart your workouts. First Form is all about getting real people, real results, and I'm one of them. I've been using First Form supplements consistently for over 2 years now, and the difference in my overall health is incredible. I've been hitting new personal bests in the gym, getting better quality sleep, and feeling completely energized throughout my entire workday. What sets First Form apart is their commitment to quality and education. They provide the best nutrient-dense ingredients, plus their products are backed by rigorous testing and research. And guess what? They've got a special offer just for M3 listeners. Click the link in the show notes to explore the full range of supplements and receive free shipping on your next order. So don't wait. Take the first step towards a healthier, happier you with First Form, because I know your goals are within reach and I'm here to help you crush them. Thank you, First Form, for supporting our show, and thank you all for listening. Now let's get back to our podcast.
So for me, I have a different perspective on it. I've also done a lot of the world's strongest psychedelics. So I've done like ayahuasca, DMT. I've done 5-MeO-DMT, which is the Bufo frog poison, which is the world's strongest psychedelic.
Also the mimosa flower. I did both.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, it's both masculine and feminine energy. Yeah.
Yeah. So like you go down those roads and like you start, you have a different perspective on life. Now that's, I didn't start off with that. I eventually got there. But for me, God is everything. God is every wave that's ever crashed. It's every thought that's been thought. It's every word that's been spoken. It's the future, the present, the past. It's the pain, the hurt, the love. It's all of it. That singularity all inside of this. So the duality is to really understand and have faith in that and even experience in that, but then also be in a human type body where we're not meant to understand it. Our brains aren't meant to comprehend it. We're not meant to figure it out. We're not meant to truly understand God. We're meant to have a human experience, and that's what we're meant to live. So it's like balancing that relationship and that thought and that knowledge. And once you get to that point, you start balancing your personal development with your spirituality, with your professional development, with like, am I being healthy? Does it matter? What's my purpose and passion? Does it matter? You know, like, am I doing this great? Life's phenomenal. Everything's awesome. Like, fuck, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, you start really going into this mix. And I mean, we all go through it in some kind of capacity.
I feel like it comes with a strong sense of faith as well, of knowing that the universe has your back, that all is going to be okay. The world just is what it is. And through, like you had even mentioned, I was watching your story. It's like, we have choices. I just talked about this last night. We all make a conscious decision in life through our moral moments and our choices that we get the opportunity to make being humans, that separates us as a human species through our thoughts, our awareness. That's the pause between the situation that's happening and your response to it. And as you have that hopeful spiritual faith, you're skipping a really big part that I want to touch on, is you've lost everything and you had faith that there was meant more for you. And you were homeless at one point because of that.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's dive into that. But you're absolutely spot on. I mean, I think it's a practice and it's a discipline. You're going to get thrown through ups and downs. And now when I go through adversities, I go lean on my good habits. And my good habits and my leaning start from that first spiritual experience, which then led to homelessness. So it all ties in. But like even the last few months for me have been rough. I've had my highs and lows and balancing my personal and professional. And I've realized I haven't been posting videos as much. I haven't been talking much. I've just kind of hermited back. And then I had a breakdown. Even last week I was in Vegas and I had just a breakdown. The world collapsed inside of me. And I reset. I quit smoking. I haven't been drinking. I've been working out twice a day. I've been doing this. I'm feeling better. I'm feeling healthier. I'm feeling happier. So I lean on my good habits. Because you're always going to have those breakdowns. So at the end of that year and a half of my drug-filled adventure, I had a choice. I was basically living with my buddy, and he was disabled. I was helping him out. His arms didn't work. He was ex-military. His arms didn't necessarily work. And we were staying in the studio, and we were helping like homeless people in the area shower and get clean and stuff like that. And one guy basically lost his shit, broke the window, and we got an eviction notice. And I had a choice between getting a job and a place to live or starting a business and sleeping outside. And I just thought about that corporate job. And I thought about how miserable I was. And I thought about, if I go get a job right now, all I'm going to do is waste another 8 months to a year to go start a business. And I was like, I'm sick and tired of this shit. Like, I'm tired of listening to people. I'm tired of fucking mentors and leaders and fucking this. I'm just tired of it all. Like, I'm just going to go do this. Like, get out of my way. Like, I finally just, like, I'm putting this on my shoulders. I'm going to go do this. So I took my happy ass to a park thinking that it wouldn't be 3 months. I thought, like, oh, he's got permanent disability, guaranteed income. We'll go find another place to rent. Like, the first week, I'm, like, camping at the beach here in Paradise Point. Like, life is great. I'm going to, like, an art gallery event. I'm doing red carpet events in a tux and, like, sleeping at a park. And it's, like, phenomenal. And it is what it is.
Felt like La La Land.
You know? And at that time, I did have a three-month consulting gig for a publicly traded audio tech company. And the guy was an anomaly. One of the books he gave me was a book that he wrote called I Am God. It's unpublished. Mm-hmm. You can't buy it anywhere. But the moral of it was, he was like, if you read this every day for 30 days, it's going to change your life when you first wake up. And I did that. And it was like these seven blessings. And it was, and Abraham Hicks talks about it where it's unconditional. So it's like loving, kind, successful, you know, like just their unconditional messages. So I realized looking back at it that it wasn't necessarily those seven blessings or those this. It was the action of when you wake up, the first thing you consume is reading and saying it out loud, some kind of positive this, affirmation, right?
Yeah.
And I did that. And then I became homeless. And I was so happy. Man, I was so happy. I was just genuinely, because I was waking up, I was on top of this, and I was preaching out this message. I was feeling this energy, and it was just flowing through me, and it was complete faith. And it was my first, like, spiritual experience where I was like, holy shit, this worked. Like, look at how I'm feeling. I have no bank account, no car, no home, no phone, and no laptop. And I'm starting a business right now, and I am thrilled. Those things don't add up. Like I'm not coming from a sand mine in, like, South Africa where I'm, like, I'm free and I have water. Like, I'm coming from, like, living in San Diego 20 years. You shouldn't be that happy with nothing.
From your perspective.
Yeah, right? Like, I'm not coming from, like, a third world country where I'm, like, just lucky to be alive. Like, I'm coming from, like, having a place and a car and a this and being around business. Like, you shouldn't have no phone, no laptop, no money, no car, no anything, and be just on top of the world. I was. So it was, like, the first time I experienced, like, probably what should be the hardest time in my life, but being so happy with it through that affirmation and spirituality. It took 3 months, and there was definitely moments as time went on that were really difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, there's only so many times you're going to sleep under a trailer in the rain, like taking care of people and bullshit and being like, oh, this is really great. Like, it wears on you. But I just did it. I started the business, and then I eventually sold it, and I never went back. And I've stepped in different lanes of consulting and all different types of things in business, to where now it's more about the build. Now for me, business is art. I don't look at it as like, what can I do to make money? It's like, it's art to me. It's like a painting, you know, and I'll spend 10 years on this painting and be like, I made that. Like, this is a representation of me.
So you built your first tech company.
So I had a media company. That was what that was.
Media, yeah.
Photos, videos, 3D tours for agents, on property pages, and then we had a website company that came out of that, which was kind of like the first introduction to tech. But I never did any of the tech shit. My business partner did.
Mm.
I always did, like, marketing and sales and running the company. I didn't do any of the technical aspect. That was more of his lane, and he did that. So,
did real estate come around the same time?
It was all in the real estate industry. Yeah. So we did it for agents.
Yeah.
So that was just kind of the niche. And then it wasn't until a couple of years ago, until I sold the company, that I started a marketing product. Then in order to pull this product off, I got good at tech. And then now I'm really good at tech. We're also really good at marketing, but just kind of put it all together.
It's funny how you learn the skill sets of what kind of becomes a job and then it becomes a passion. Like you were just saying, how you can do the both aspects of that, or do both in that aspect. And maybe tech, you didn't even realize was an undercover passion of yours that now has become a new art, like you just said.
Yeah.
You don't see it as work.
Well, for me, it's like in a business, you have the product, you have the service, you have the hiring, the training, you have the accounting, you have the marketing, you have your sites, you have your systems, you have all of these things. So in order for me to really build the business the way I wanted it to, I needed to get good and understand all of these things.
Bingo, yes.
So my previous business partner laid down such a solid foundation for understanding and building technology. Like, we built a website company together. We built that business together. We spent over half a decade together. I got such a good foundation from that, that when I started doing it, I followed all those rules and concepts. And what's changed is you don't have to be good at coding anymore. You can do this with no code. Like, I don't know what JavaScript is or HTML. I don't know how to connect shit. I barely know what a webhook is.
That was like back in MySpace days for me.
You know, and like, that's like the extent of my technical knowledge. But like, I have five companies, but I am the CTO of five companies. I'm the chief technology officer. CTO, yeah. For five companies. And it's like, it's not difficult now with no code, but there's such a power and advantage to being able to be front end, which is like CEO marketing, and then back end, which is like your systems and technology. Because in the past, you'd have to have those sides communicate. Now, if you can do both, there's no loss in friction. You understand your client needs, you understand the marketing needs, you understand the market space needs, but you also understand the costs, the structure, the timelines, what needs to happen, the efficiency. And then that helps you with your staff and your service and your hiring, and it helps with your margins, like, and it all floats together. So to be able to have those skill sets is something that is starting to be possible, that was really unique in the past, but it's really powerful.
Okay. Your company now, tell me the name.
Hephaestus Innovation.
And why that name?
Hephaestus was the Greek god of technology and creativity.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the a few gods to ever be banned from Olympus and come back. He built all the tools. He built all the tools for the war and all the gods. He was known as the god that was more compassionate towards humankind. He created automations in his workshop by having like the workshop tables and stuff move automatically. And then him and Athena, the goddess of wisdom, came down and helped humanity. And he's credited with like giving fire and like, you know, igniting all that. And it tells like this story. It also ties into with my personal life to like my mom and I just went our separate ways a decade ago. I don't know where she went. And so he was kind of like outcast by his mom in the world. So I wasn't sure what the name of the company was going to be, but thinking about the long-term vision and then hearing like Hephaestus, here's this god that like built all the tools, technology, had misfortunes, personal life too, like between Aphrodite and Athena. And then I'm like looking at my tough relationships and personal life and then mom shit and gods and automations and tech. And I'm like, yeah, fuck, that's it.
And the other companies, can you explain a little bit more? Because I mean, I want to go back into Hephaestus, but I want to talk about more of the other.
Well, Hephaestus is the only company I run and do. It's just that we now service different industries and different companies. So I've taken on roles within those companies. They're all clients of one. So I will not work on anything else besides my company.
Got it.
But if I built out entire technology and systems for a document review company, and I've built out all of that, it may be on my software, but then I'm also acting CTO for that company.
Got it.
Same thing with like a golf company that's expanding in multiple cities and states. I built out all the technology. I'm sitting as CTO, but everything is within my system, my technology, my platform.
Use that one as an example. So your friend Mike, you guys, I think, were neighbors or roommates or something?
Roommates, actually. Yeah, I hated it back in the day.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay, so explain that build up just to help somebody with their business as well.
So Mike's such a great example, actually, because when me and Mike met, he didn't have any social media. Mm-hmm. Like, he wasn't using it, didn't understand it, none of it. And he just kind of started listening and following and doing stuff. And he's got, like, he's got videos for, like, 2 million views, 3 million views, 5 million views. He walks around places and they go, "Oh, you're Mike Maggs." And, like, he, like, built up this personality and he just trusted it and trusted the consistency and just, he is an influencer. He is inside of that space and lane and doing those things. So he listened to me on the marketing side. I kind of helped him there. And then with the hooks and the reels and the this. And then throughout that, I was also like, okay, you need to organize here. This is what you need to focus on your business. Here's the structure. So it was one of those, like, just friendships for last 7-8 years or so that has gotten him and grown in that lane. When we first moved in together, I remember when he was going on his dates with his now wife.
Aww.
They went on 8 dates and I didn't even kiss.
No. Oh, shoot.
Yeah. He was like, what am I doing? Like, am I, like, going in there, like, she like me, she not like me? And then I flew into his wedding. I was one of the groomsmen at his wedding years later. So, like, I've got to watch the story of Mags go from, like, you know, just a golf coach having this vision but not being able to pull it out of his head to, like, cool, his social media is on point, he's getting millions of views, he's getting clients, he's opening up a company, he's expanding this, he's got investors, he's running, like, you know, he's doing it.
What's the name of his company?
So he's got Studio Golf.
Studio Golf.
Which is a remote indoor, like, golf training facilities with both workouts, simulators and different types of exercises and coaches. And then he's also got Southern California Golf Academy up in Carlsbad, which is a driving range, also with technology and coaches, but just a driving range as well.
And he's expanded it from out of state to in state, correct?
Yeah, he's opening his first location in El Paso this month, actually, and then looking at a signed a lease for San Diego. So there's one next to the range here.
Cool.
And then I think it's Phoenix or Scottsdale next. They're just trying to lock down some leases. So they're
great golf areas.
Yeah, they're opening and expanding, yeah.
And again, you're watching somebody build their business, but also build themselves. And that's the personal development side that comes with it, too. If you are, you just don't show up and say, hey, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. You're going to go through these life experiences that bring you to that point to show you the opportunities of what it takes to become an entrepreneur, if that's your path.
You know, you see these videos of these YouTubers and 22 and 23 year old kids, and they're like, I made $2 million and $3 million and $5
million. That's like the 0.001%.
And also, I'm not shitting or taking away anything from that. I almost made that kind of money when I was 18, 19, and looking back at it, thank God I didn't. Because I was already so fueled on ego and all this shit. I'm so glad I didn't do that at that time. I would have blown it. I probably would be dead. Like, you look at that and it's hard to not compare it of, like, oh, it's been years of my business. I'm not making it, or I'm not killing it, or I'm not this. Like, am I doing something wrong? Or you know, all of these things. It's so easy to be hard on ourselves in a professional level when you tie in success to income. But you need to tie in success towards knowledge, towards assets, towards, like, growth. And, like, there's so many things you really need to tie it into to understand. And it's not just like, oh, I'm doing $50,000 a month in profit and life's good and I'm going to Bora Bora again. Like, you know, are you happy?
Exactly. I almost think back to, like, child stars, where you get such a gift of financial opportunity as a child, but there's so many other hardships that I feel like God is going to bless them with other lessons in life, not just financial hardship.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I started dreaming again lately.
Ooh, I love talking about dreams.
I had a dream last week, and then some of them feel more and more real.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a dream, someone very close to me passing away. And it just kind of puts in this idea of, you know, you deal with your personal and business and stuff like that. But as we get older, we deal with the fact that the people we love and care around us aren't around.
Mm.
And as you get older, it happens more frequently. And we have to let go of our parents one day. And we have to let go of our animals one day. And some people have to let go of their friends unexpectedly, right? And you have this just realization. So we're always going to transition through pain. And if you're one of the people that survives in the end and you're really older, then the pain is, how many people in your life have you lost?
Mm.
You know? Like, it's just, it's the Buddhist philosophy of life is suffering.
I just quoted on this last night that life, we experience pain, but it's up to us to, with the amount of suffering that we have.
And the cure to suffering is detachment.
Yes.
You know, like the noble truths of it, and that detachment can come from following the noble truths and all this and that. Like, there's a reason that these lessons and concepts have been around for thousands of years, and they're not easy.
Yes.
But like, that's part of my practice and things that I'm trying to work on and trying to understand, because, you know, you're not promised. And coming from a life insurance background, I'd sit here at someone's couch and tell them the people in the hospital today didn't expect to be there yesterday and stuff like that. But it's true.
Acceptance, surrendering, it all comes as part of life is what it is. We get to enjoy the moments that we have. You and I sitting here and having this conversation. What a beautiful moment. Do we get to expect that it attaches us forever? No. Do you expect that Achilles is going to be here forever? No. And there's pain that comes with that, but we have to learn how to accept and surrender and hopefully have faith.
And even when you start practicing that and doing that, because I feel like there's a good level of people in personal development that have started doing that, me, myself included, but it's the things that you don't want to let go of. That's where the growth is after a certain point. Mm-hmm. You know, you do personal development for long enough.
Like a relationship.
Exactly. Relationships are a perfect thing. Yes. Where you don't want to accept it. You don't want to let it go. Mm-hmm. You don't want to give up, especially if someone's a fighter. Like, I'm a fighting personality. I will fight. No matter the hurt, the pain, this, I will fight. Like, I won't give up. I don't know how. So like, but that's also how you get hurt, because then you're holding on to something that's not there. And then, so like, learning how to accept that and learning how to surrender and learning how to let go and learning how to grow through that kind of pain. It's where you don't want to go that you have to.
I've also learned that when we lose someone, whether it's by death or detachment, like even your mom too, you don't just mourn the person, you mourn who you were when you were with that person.
We get this, in a relationship, they'd say romanticizing it, right? You romanticize the ideas and the memories, what could be. But then, yeah, you can do that with people that you lost too. You can, but, and not in a romantic way, but in a, like, I wish I remembered their voice. Mm. I had this memory. I wish we did that again. I like the way that they made me feel safe and I had someone to talk to. Or, oh, I just learned this lesson on my own. I wish I didn't have to. You know, and you go through life and they just, they're triggers, but you have to figure out how to turn those triggers into glimmers, right? So one of the most powerful lessons I've learned that is also a practice is when you have a thought, especially if it loops and is repetitive and it's not serving you a purpose, recognizing it and changing it. How often do you think about what you're thinking about? Mm-hmm. So like, if it is a relationship, and you're thinking about this, okay, recognizing it, I'm having this thought. It's okay. What do I want to have happen? Let me change the message. Let me put it in and actively stopping it and moving it forward. You can reprogram your brain that way. So it's understanding, okay, you put yourself in a hard place. I said this on the story yesterday where it's like, we're all self-made, only successful people want to admit it. Mm. If you're going through a shit time in life, it's on you. You're self-made. Things are going to happen to you that you can't control. Okay. But how you react to it, mm-hmm. what you do with it, that is in your control. Mm-hmm. And you have to take responsibility. And it's not always going to be easy. You have to go step up. It's okay to have breakdowns. It's okay to feel hurt. It's okay to feel pain. It's not okay to stay there if you don't want to. If it's part of healing, great. But at one point, you have to reprogram, make a decision, and move in a direction that's going to serve your purpose.
Just like the thought and the feeling is a moment passing in time, you are not to connect yourself soul-wise with that. Rather than saying, I am sad, I am embarrassed, I am hurt. I have feelings of embarrassment. I have feelings of sadness. I have feelings of hurt. Let me let that go.
there's a book by Michael Singer. I have it in my room. I can't remember the title of it. It talks about a variety of things. What I like to point out in it is we have this voice in our head, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that voice in your head actually isn't you. And people get kind of caught off guard by that. And it's like, okay.
Because we can't control it. It doesn't shut off.
Well, yeah. So take that voice in your head and give it a body and put it next to you and watch a movie. Oh, this motherfucker won't shut up. He's a roommate in your head. She's a roommate in your head. Watch a movie. Oh, that's orange like this. Oh, that's this. And you're like, shut the fuck up. Right? But the second you realize that that is not you, because now you can feel your spirit and consciousness, and now you've been able to separate that voice from you, you start going, oh, this is a chattery thing in my head. But how often is this thing wrong about financial advice and people and this? This thing feeds off of the past experiences of fears and pain that we have in our life.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we listen to it?
Why do we listen to it?
We don't even know that there's a difference.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, so now it's like, okay, just by that one little shift of going like, all right, I need to feel good. I need to be in tune with my emotion. I need to breathe and feel easy. You can start having this separation. Another example from the book is how you go through a breakup and you're laying around the house and you're depressed and you got takeout and it's all dirty. And your ex calls you and misses you and she wants to see you. Instantly, you're filled with energy, you're cleaning the house, you're excited, this and that. Where did that energy come from?
Ooh, Untethered Soul, that's where that...
There we go, that's the book, Untethered Soul.
Oh, is that who?
Yeah, Michael Singer, Untethered Soul.
Such a great book.
Yeah.
Okay, so Untethered Soul, you get this breath of energy, but that energy is something that we create from within ourselves.
Well, it's been there the whole time.
Yes, exactly.
So like, because like, what changed, right? So like, what changed? Like, it's been in there the whole time. So it's recognizing that, all right, I need to tap into that. I need to come into that space. Mm-hmm. And it's regardless of what's happening, tapping into that. Yeah, Untethered Soul is bomb.
You guys go read that book. I'm going to put it in the show notes.
Yeah, no, there's a few of them. I've got my library is growing. I need to start.
I didn't realize that was the author. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, he's got another one too. I think it was a prequel or post, but yeah, he's got a few of them.
Okay, I'm going to go find it.
I've started adding up. I'll show you the... They're around here somewhere.
Good shit. I want to be like, good shit. Okay, so just to wrap this all together, I love this conversation. What a beautiful connection right there at that point. What advice would you give someone who is wanting to be in that entrepreneurial role and is afraid or have those feelings of attachment? Or stuck in their thoughts or overwhelming, you know, overthinking, I should say. What would you give them as a bit of advice of taking action?
That's it. Take action. Straight up. Because if you can't take action, you're not going to do anything else.
Ooh, yeah.
If you go, this is for me, start doing. Make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Start messing up. Spend money recklessly. Make bad relationships, make bad connections, lose sales, lose clients, whatever it is, go do it. Because it's the inaction that will keep you in place. If you really want to go down this route, go do. I don't care about how many years you spend reading books or if you have your business degree or this or that. None of that matters. Because the second you get hands-on with a business, you realize this is what you're learning and doing. And now, look, granted, if you understand business and have a degree and taught from a formal way, like, sure, it does help. But by no means does that the requirement for getting started. You want to be an entrepreneur? Go be an entrepreneur. Go take action. Go design a logo. Make it bad. Go pick a name of a company. Stop. Don't give yourself excuses. Oh, well, I can't have this. Well, I need a license. Well, I don't know this. Figure it the fuck out. Figure it out. I did it outside with no laptop and bank account and phone and then sold that company. I did that because I wanted to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I could have slept on people's couches. I wanted to be able to say I did it with no home, no phone, no bank, no laptop, and I started and sold a business and I made millions of dollars in between.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that shit in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
What's stopping you? Go take action. I don't care about the excuse. Excuses won't fly with me. If you really want to go down this route, go. And then come to me when you've got, I did this and this and it worked out. Great. I will help people that take action. I have people I've taken under my wing and I have people I help support. I don't care about charging money at all. But I won't waste my time with like, I got an idea and this. Go do something. And then go bring me the results of what you've done and then I'll help you optimize what you've done. But until you've done something, don't come in this ring.
I think that's something with our generation is we just expect right now. And like we were just saying, the 21, 22 year olds, these people are like, I should just be given this. I should just like, it's more of a demanding, expecting type of generation versus I feel like, our grandparents, everybody that's in that older generation, they probably worked too hard for very little money and we're not working hard enough.
Yeah. I mean, we're on this fine line where I went home when the streetlights came on. I played outside. There was no cell phones. Mm-hmm. Nintendo started coming out. PlayStation 1 came out. And then end of high school, college, Apple, Android, these types of things. So we're on the cusp of like, I saw both sides of reality. In society, it comes down to your values though. Because it doesn't matter what generation you're born in. Either you have the values and understanding of work ethic and I'm going to go get it and you have that motivation and fire, or you don't.
Preach. Yeah.
Like there's kids right now that are 16 years old that have it.
Yes.
They feel like the underdog and they are growing up with a chip on their shoulder and with the this and the that, and they're going to go figure it out and they have that fire within them. They have that. I think it was the FBI that did a study where it's like to be successful, you need to be a certain amount of fucked up.
I should be super much more successful then.
No, but it was because it was just like they did an analysis of all these like CEOs and business owners and stuff like that. And it's like a certain amount of bad shit has to happen to you growing up to shape you to become this type of person.
And even just thinking about recent traumas in my life, I feel like that doesn't end when you're a child.
No. And you have to kind of figure them out. But that's the thing. It's like, you in society, you see this whole glitz and glamour and traveling and CEO and this money and this lifestyle. And people don't talk about the fact that it's like, that is the outcome of like years of pain and effort and work and everything else. This is not an easy path. It's not an easy journey. So also, it's okay to feel alone.
Also, somebody's not having a meltdown and go, wait, hold on, let me just put on my camera really quick.
Yeah, there's far and few. I'm far and few, right? Like it's exactly that where it's like, and that's the authenticity. And that's, I've always wanted to share that side of it because there's people that aren't as fueled up as me, but they have it and they want it. And they're one step away, but they just feel a little bit too alone. Mm-hmm. They lost a little faith. They lost a little belief. And just understanding that this is normal, that you're going to go through this, that you're not alone, that makes all the difference. So like, great. I got an article in LA Weekly coming out and I'm going to go to this event in Tulum to go speak on a business event. And it's like, oh, Pat's killing it. He's doing great. At the same time, I got to finish paying my staff for this month. And a week ago, I was crying on a hotel room floor in Vegas. In the last few months, I've been going through some personal shit. And I've gotten fucking hurt. And I'm sometimes struggle with motivation. And I struggled with quitting smoking again. After quitting for a year, I started smoking again recently. I finally quit again. And my health and my weight and my strength and my this and my that. And it's like, yo, like, that's part of this world. Mm-hmm. Like, we all go through it. It's okay. Be kind to yourself.
Be kind to yourself.
You live in your mind. You live in your body. Be kind to yourself. We like, it's going to fluctuate.
Thank you for being on the show, Pat. Fuck yeah. This was such a great episode.
Thank you for joining me on another episode as we learned and explored all things movement, mindset, and medicine. As always, my goal for each episode of this podcast is to share innovative tools and techniques to help you thrive and find stability with your overall health and personal development, alongside the growth of the world around us. Please share this with someone you know will benefit from this episode, as well as rate and review. This helps us reach more people and provide feedback as to how we can better help each of you. make sure to check out our community website, www.mermaidmethod.com, to learn more about our upcoming events, eco-friendly products, and coaching programs. Now let's make massive waves together.